Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice Dyer in the Magnus Protocol. As part of the Magnus Archive's 10th anniversary, Rusty Quill is hosting a special Magnus Live show at the upcoming Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield. Join co-creators Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell on the 5th of July for a new iteration of our live show, Statement Begins, where you can hear fan-favourite statements such as Anglerfish, Red Live, and gain exclusive insights into the creation and history of the show straight from the creators themselves. You can buy your tickets now, including limited numbers of meet and greet tickets, from crossedwires.live or the link in the description of this episode.
Na, noch keine Pläne fürs Wochenende? Besucht die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt in Freiburg mit euren Mädels, der Oma oder dem Knallertypen von nebenan. Wir lieben alle Jahrgänge. Entdeckt unsere interaktive Ausstellung bei der Erlebnistour mit Audioguide und einem Glas Sekt und genießt im Pavillon die ganze Welt von Rotkäppchen. Die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt, nur eine Sektlänge entfernt.
Hi everyone, it's Anusha Battersby here. Today, I'm here to tell you all about Not Quite Dead, a brilliant podcast on the RQ Network. Not Quite Dead is a gory horror romance podcast from the award-winning team behind Spirit Box Radio, Remnants, and Clockwork Bird. Join Alfie, a nurse working overtime, when a patient arrives with her throat torn out. This is just the beginning of a terrifying night as Alfie finds himself caught in a battle between the living and the undead. Saved by a mysterious vampire named Casper, they find themselves inescapably bound together. Neither of them are happy about it, but the draw of each other's blood is irresistible. Search for Not Quite Dead wherever you listen to your podcasts, or go to hangingslothstudios.com or www.rustyquill.com. If you want to support Not Quite Dead and its creators, head to www.rustyquill.com/fundraiser.
This episode is dedicated to Dove Halber. Ceaseless Watcher, dedicate this now to my dearest sister, a true disciple of the Eye, haunting my waking nightmares even now, and the best sister a girl could ask for. Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Protocol. Episode 19, Hard Reset.
You need topping up, or...?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Looks like you raided every photocopy of the building this time. The papers? There seems to be more of them every time I come in here. You're lucky Lena hasn't noticed. She's pretty uptight about how much stuff we print. Celia, what is all this?
Just research.
Is that... alchemy?
You recognize it?
Some of it. This one's something to do with transference, and this one, yeah, it's all about spiritual substitution of elements, although looks like it's incomplete.
You're what, an alchemist now?
Hardly. I ran into a bunch of this when I was looking into the Magnus Institute. Turns out they were pretty deep into all this stuff. What's got you looking into it?
Just curious. Speaking of, how's the research into the Institute going?
I don't know. I think I'm going to drop it.
Really?
Yeah, Alice keeps saying I'm getting obsessed and... Don't tell her I said this, but I think she might have a point. I've never been good with loose ends.
If you're sure. Seemed like you were handling it okay to me.
You think? Well, either way, I've got enough cases piling up. I doubt I'd have the time anyway.
Tell me about it.
Speaking of, I should probably get back to it. Enjoy whatever this is.
Will do. Oh, and if I find anything to do at the Institute, I just keep it to myself, yeah?
Oh, well, I mean, I wouldn't go that far.
To my esteemed colleague and friend, Honourable Fellow of the Royal Society, Robert Boyle, from the Bureau of Robert Hooke, Curator of Experiments of the same, regarding enactment of that most regrettable protocol in the service of God, King, and Country, against the Fellow Isaac Newton, penned in the year of our Lord, 1684. I write to you now with intelligence of the gravest nature and a proposal most severe. I pray that my words do not further estrange you from me, and that you believe me when I assure you that the suggested action is profoundly necessary for the continuation and preservation of good science. We have much discussed the great divide between Isaac's experimentations and your own essential works, and so I have oft found myself at odds with you, for though much of his work is dubious in its moral principle, his studies have always proven most illuminative, and have many times assisted my own researches. I fear, however, his most recent works have disturbed this precarious equilibrium, turning instead to most improper, perhaps blasphemous, ends, and I find myself left with no recourse other than to make it known to you in the hope that I might reawaken our previously close concord, which has lain dormant these long years, in service of a wholesale rejection of his creation, which, I am of the firm opinion, has finally erred towards the abominable and must be halted. I recall with much shame that it was myself who pressed you so vociferously for restraint last time this protocol was enacted. It was I who begged patience, certain as I was that my work on micrographia might have rendered a remedy for that most awful plague. It was I who warned that to enact a protocol against the great city of London itself was a step beyond the rights of our position, but you were, as is so oft the case, correct in your steadfastness. And I confess, purgation of all that most dangerous and unfit knowledge was both necessary and good. It was only through the protocol that we were spared from that dread emission. And I fear that such an act is once again required, though it is my fervent hope that on this occasion there is still sufficient time to limit the breadth of the poisonous act. As well you know, despite Isaac's standing as a fellow within the estimable society, his experiments persist in prying into such knowledge as we both know to be anathema to good science. His work on the vegetative propagation of metals has proceeded unabated these recent years, and I am now most certain that the fruits of his labor will lead to tragedy, death, and damnation, if they are left to mature unchecked. I have of late been a somewhat more frequent visitor to Isaac than you may have suspected, and I fear that of the many sins I have committed in my time upon this earth, this may be one of those I come most to regret. I had, of course, no knowledge of the perilous extent of his experiments, and had I known such, I would never have deigned to further associate myself with him. But his most recent letters promised work of a quite astonishing nature, and, may God forgive me, my curiosity could not be assuaged without witness. Upon his insistence, I visited his laboratory in Trinity in a sanguine mood, though this was immediately disturbed by the damnable presence of that stunted dog he keeps, worrying my coat-tails as I approached the threshold. As is his wont, Isaac failed to notice my approach, preoccupied as he was with his work, and it was only by declaring myself most forcefully that he could be sufficiently distracted to acknowledge my presence. Forgoing the customary pleasantries, he instead proceeded straight to his laboratory, wherein I saw he had a glass flask of great proportions, at least 30 gallons or thereabouts, within which there was an element of such overwhelming radiance that to look upon it directly was to dazzle the eyes and throw the mind into confusion. Composing myself, I queried Isaac on the nature of this creation, whereupon he explained with customary disinterest that he had finally perfected the work of Wilhelm Homburg to produce what he termed the Arbor Philosophorum Perfecta. I was naturally most intrigued, but despite my questioning, he refused to elaborate, instead passing me a smoked glass that I might gaze upon his creation with greater clarity, and when I did so, I came to understand that what I was looking at was a small tree ensconced in a clear solution. At first I presumed it to be merely another work of dendritic silver, as we have seen before, albeit one of surpassing quality and finesse. However, I soon came to realize this was something altogether grander, and profoundly abhorrent. Its branches were exquisite and delicate, swaying slightly from small eddies in the liquid, and they shone with every spectra. I must confess that, look upon it, one was filled with profound wonder at its exquisite elegance. I professed as much to Isaac, and he replied quite solemnly, "As are all of the Lord's living works." This struck me as somewhat incongruous, and gave me a moment's pause, for though impressive, the tree was quite clearly mineral in nature, and as such must be lacking in that essential vitality that only the Lord God can bestow. I presumed his words an unfortunate jest, but he then asked me if I would taste of its fruit. I refused, of course, assuming the offer another of his odd japes, but his face was grave. He then opened the flask and reached inside, muttering as he did so, "De ligno autem scientiae boni et mali, ne comedas in cocunque enim dei comedris ex eo morte morieris." Even I, steeped in worldly matters as I am, recognized the Lord's words to Adam, and was much dismayed at the implication. Isaac then plucked the delicate fruit with ungloved hands and held it before me. I began to not only doubt Isaac in that moment, but even fear him, for I knew he had finally transgressed the limits of anything within the bounds of mortal philosophy. Until that moment, our encounter had been, if not typical, at least explicable. Mayhap Isaac had made a legitimate discovery, and was merely indulging in some grand performance before providing some less grotesque explanation. But such was not to be, for no sooner had I seen the fruit upon his palm than he dipped it into the waiting mouth of that cursed dog I had failed to see skulking at my feet. Isaac's eyes never left mine, but I could not help but watch as the wretched canine swallowed it. There was a moment's stillness within which Isaac watched me closely, for my reaction was seemingly of more interest to him at that moment than the fate of the animal. And my reaction was terror. The dog remained motionless, at first seemingly unaffected by its unnatural feast, but as the moments passed, I espied a growing torpor in its manner, with slowed breathing, sagging posture, and drooping jowls. It lay down as if to sleep, whereupon it grew even more peaceful and still. I almost believed it dead, poisoned by my companion, but then I saw something far more distressing. The creature was taking root. Strands of its mottled brown hair were extruding downwards between the floor, seeking the dark earth below. Then, too, its back began to sprout, radiant branches unfurling and thickening before me, reaching upwards towards the sunlight with a seemingly insatiable desire. The dog then opened one eye and stared at me, and this was the most disturbing thing of all, for that orb was also shimmering with that unnatural light. But more than that, it looked upon me, and it knew me not as a beast knows its master, but as one man knows another. And though such a creature must by all natural law lack that essential and ephemeral anima that is required for such awful knowledge, I tell you here, Robert, it saw me and it knew me. I felt myself grow insensible at that violation, and before I could restrain myself, I had grasped a heavy instrument with which I might dash its skull upon the floor. Isaac, however, intervened, and for the first time since feeding the animal that accursed fruit, he spoke and bade me to remain calm. He then reached back to the flask with a smaller cup and decanted a portion of the solution into it. Then, seemingly without concern, he poured it upon the rapidly growing monstrosity. There was a brief hiss and a release of steam which occluded my vision entirely, quickly followed by a slight tugging at my trouser legs from which I recoiled in horror, fearing the creature had reached out to claim me in its insidious grip. But when the vapor cleared, I found myself cowering from nothing more than that mange-ridden dog. No longer sprouting and burdened with knowledge, it was reduced to a mere beast once again. Isaac laughed at this ignominious display and suggested I step away to recover so that I might better appreciate that which had been revealed to me. I instead took my leave and hurried out of not just his chambers but the entire college as fast as I was able. Thus it is that I find myself writing this account for you, that you might better understand my concerns. No doubt you agree with me that I have witnessed something which is far outside that which we could, in good conscience and understanding, describe as good science. For if such a transmutation can be elicited from a lower creature devoid of soul or reason, I tremble to consider how it might affect the children of Adam, blessed as we are with greater faculty and insight for both good and evil. Though it pains me to speak so poorly of one so well regarded as Isaac, I fear this latest excess is beyond what can be called conscionable. His work must be curtailed for the safety of all. I remain opposed, however, to any notion of violence against his person. He is a prominent figure, and his work, though misguided, is not wantonly evil. I propose that we enact the protocol, but limit it only to his laboratory, destroying his research and correspondence, for if we can end this digression from good science and divert him with more virtuous work, we might yet take possession of a newly ardent ally in our vigils. This is, of course, on condition that he never discovers our intervention, nor is left to work in such solitude again. Robert, my dear compatriot, I implore you to consider my plea despite our recent disagreements, for if you fail to act, I will instead be forced to intervene alone, and by God's grace I know not if I hold the fortitude to do what would need to be done. Pray reply with all celerity, for I fear that time is short in this matter. Yours with the utmost respect and gratitude, for the sake of London, England, and for all of Christendom. Robert.
Alice?
Yeah?
Do you have a moment?
Apparently. What's up?
Can we talk in the break room?
Look, Sam, I really don't have time to mess around tonight.
It'll only take a sec.
What's wrong? You're doing your twitchy eye. You only do that when something's up.
Are the computers listening to us?
What?
As in, are they monitoring our conversations or something?
Freddy can barely boot up without throwing an error, so I seriously doubt it's monitoring your loo breaks. Typical Colin, to have a complete breakdown just to get out of fixing the damn thing.
Alice.
I know, I'm just frustrated. Look, what's brought this on all of a sudden, Sam?
I know it sounds crazy, but, well, it's starting to feel like I'm deliberately being given cases that point to the Magnus Institute.
You're right.
I am?
Yeah, that does sound crazy.
I'm not making this up. These days, it's like every other case links back to it in some way.
Sam, enough. Can you even hear yourself? Look, this place can really get to you if you're not careful. And I really don't want you to go the same way as Colin.
Have you heard anything from him?
No. Was that all? Because like I said, I'm up to my eyes over here.
Yeah. Yeah, forget I said anything.
Great. For God's sake!
So just to be crystal clear, you want me to go out alone to an isolated location to meet a dangerous external you wouldn't allow in this building, and you won't even consider the possibility of giving me some kind of security.
Correct. I regret that there aren't more resources available to support you, but that is the reality of the situation.
This is ridiculous. You're the one who was laying into me for bringing Lady Mowbray here. What happened to unacceptable risks to personnel?
I'd like to remind you that you are the one who resorted to blackmail to secure this position. I have completed such assignments myself on many occasions, and this is an essential part of the role. If, however, on reflection, you have come to realise you are unfit for the job, you are, as always, welcome to resign. I'm sure your family will be able to find you an easier position elsewhere.
I know that the OIAR has used Starkwall to provide security in the past. I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for some basic support.
Starkwall, as with any security force, have an unfortunate habit of escalating situations they become involved in. It's my professional opinion that you will be safer without their presence. So I'm on my own. Correct. Good luck.
Come on, Colin. We both know you're in there.
Alice, what are you doing here?
I'm trying to check up on you, you idiot. You know, like a friend.
I'm fine.
Just open the door, Colin. I'm not talking to you through an inch of ex-council chipboard. Hey, mate. You're looking here.
Give me your phone.
What?
You want inside? Then give me your phone.
Why? You're going to throw it in the fish tank, aren't you?
I have to. It's the only way to be sure. I can't let them know how much we know.
Right. Listen, Colin, we're all worried about you.
You should be worried for yourselves.
I know Lena told you to get some counselling, and I just thought I'd check. Are you seeing anyone? Professionally, I mean.
No, what I need is to not be seen. He sees too much already. Doing Mummy and Daddy Stasi proud, I'm sure. Not that anyone cares, as long as it all balances out, right? Not too much mercury, or the world ends, not too much sulfur, or we all go
Colin,
mad.
Colin, calm down, mate. You're starting to sound...
Give me your phone!
I'm not giving you my phone! Colin! Colin! Idiots. Idiots all the way down.
Magnus Protocol is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. The series is created by Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell, and directed by Alexander J. Newell. This episode was written by Alexander J. Newell and edited with additional materials by Jonathan Sims, with vocal edits by Nico Vitesse, soundscaping by Tessa Vroom, and mastering by Catherine Rinella, with music by Sam Jones. It featured Billy Hindle as Alice Dyer, Shahan Hamza as Samama Khalid, Anuja Battersby as Gwen Bouchard, Lorianne Davis as Celia Ripley, Ryan Hopevere Anderson as Colin Becker, Sarah Lambie as Lena Kelly, with additional voices from Jonathan Sims. The Magnus Protocol is produced by April Sumner, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell, Danny McDonough, Lynn C., and Samantha F. G. Hamilton, and associate producers Jordan L. Hawke, Taylor Michaels, Nicole Perlman, C.T.S. Steraven, and Megan Nice. To subscribe, view associated materials, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at The Rusty Quill, visit us on Facebook, or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Na, noch keine Pläne fürs Wochenende? Besucht die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt in Freiburg mit euren Mädels, der Oma oder dem Knallertypen von nebenan. Wir lieben alle Jahrgänge. Entdeckt unsere interaktive Ausstellung bei der Erlebnistour mit Audioguide und einem Glas Sekt und genießt im Pavillon die ganze Welt von Rotkäppchen. Die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt, nur eine Sektlänge entfernt.
Hi everyone, it's Lowry, voice of Celia from The Magnus Protocol. Today I'm here to advertise Cold Tapes, an award-winning murder mystery audio drama inspired by true crime podcasts on the RQ network. In Cold Tapes, the brutal murder of Andrew Drew Fairfield on a remote Antarctic base thrusts DCI Tessa McAllister into the claustrophobic lives of an isolated community of international scientists and crew. Through police interviews, covert recordings, and audio diaries, Tessa hears hidden agendas, concealed criminal histories, violent psychosis, and dangerous conspiracy theories that help her uncover the truth behind the murder. With the murderer still on the base, it's a race against time to untangle the maze of deception, revealing chilling truths buried beneath the ice. 16 suspects, one murderer. Can you solve it? Listen to Cold Tapes wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out coldtapes.com or rustyquill.com for more information.
Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice in the Magnus Protocol, and I'm here to tell you about From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an upcoming novel available for pre-order right now at rustyquill.com/novel. Return to the world of the Magnus Archives in From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an official prequel novel written by Nebula, World Fantasy and Aurora award-winning author Primi Mohammed, with the help of the Magnus Archives' own writer and lead voice, Jonathan Sims. From the Library of Jürgen Leitner explores an infamous organization from the Magnusverse for the first time, the perilous private library of the enigmatic collector Jürgen Leitner, where occult books are guarded and researched at a fatal cost. Leitner's library keeps the dangers of these books in check and the would-be readers safe, or so Leitner claims. For two of Leitner's employees, the risks are worth it. For Hugh Franklin, the library is a place to belong. For Sebastian Everett, the library is an opportunity to indulge arcane ambitions. Though their 10 years at the library were years apart, Hugh and Sebastian's stories unfold in parallel, and their footsteps echo down the same eerie aisles, caught in a web spun long before either ever heard the name Jürgen Leitner. Will they find a way out, or will the library consume them before it's too late? From the Library of Jürgen Leitner will be published on October the 27th, 2026, and is available for pre-order now. Visit rustyquill.com/novel for more information. That's rustyquill.com/NOVEL.